Please be seated. The last case slated for argument today is case number 2016-1712, HCP EMOH LLC versus the Washington County Board of Revision for HCP EMOH. Ms. Bauernschmidt.
Thank you. If it may please the court, my name is Karen Bauernschmidt. I'm the attorney for the property owner. I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Sure.
The property that is before this court today is a residential assisted living facility that is located in Marietta, Ohio. This property consists of one building. It was constructed in 1997, and it contains 89 units, 73 assisted living units, and 16 memory care units. The units themselves range in size from about 286 square feet to 363 square feet, and they contain a kitchenette and a bathroom. The tax year that is before the board is the 2014 tax year. The rents that are charged to the tenants include not only their residential unit that they live in, but it also includes all their meals, nursing services, housekeeping, transportation, laundry, care services, and entertainment. The issue that is before the court today is that the Board of Tax Appeals failed to follow existing Ohio law as to the proper valuation of an assisted living facility. The existing case law has been in existence for over 20 years, and we believe that the BTA committed legal error when they adopted a value that failed to value the subject assisted living facility in accordance with Ohio law. If this court affirms the decision of the Board of Tax Appeals, you will have to overturn case law. This court will have to overturn 20 years of existing case law on the proper methodology in valuing assisted living facilities.
Case law would that be?
The latest case that was before this court was Healthcare REIT Inc. versus Cuyahoga County Board of Revision, a 2014 case. That is the most recent case.
That was a plurality, wasn't it? I mean, I don't know if that established any law.
Well, the very first case was the Chippewa Place case. That was a Board of Tax Appeals decision. It's a case I handled with Mr. Racek, who is the same appraiser in this case. And there have been subsequent cases since then. The question has always been is, when you look at an assisted living facility, obviously you have your rental unit, but there's additional services. They're paying one fee for that, plus they can also pay for additional services. So it always has been, we value just the real estate. So when you have real estate and a business that are intertwined, it's always been the issue before the Board of Tax Appeals and this court, how do you extract out the real estate value from business value? And the easiest way, in the way that has been approved by this court, is to look at apartment rentals. So you're only looking to the rental for real estate only, and you don't have to figure out what portion relates to business value. The additional case that you will have to overturn is the line of cases as it relates to establishing rent based on percentage rent. For example, in the Higbee case, it's a department store. There was a movement to have, in the income approach, the property value based on a percentage of gross sales. And this court struck that down because, once again, we're starting with a business value. And since you can't use percentage of gross sales, we would suggest you can't use a percentage of business income, which is what the county's appraiser has set forth in his appraisal report.
Is that the, the lease coverage ratio?
Yeah.
You looked at the
and
net leases.
Basically what a lease coverage ratio is a percentage of revenue from the business. There's no other way to look at it. What we have at the heart of this case is, are we going to do value in use or value in exchange? And the Constitution requires value in exchange. I think that if you look at this case, Mr. Rasek, who appraised this assisted living facility. He followed the methodology of Healthcare REIT and the cases that have been before this court, including the Chippewa Place case where he was the original appraiser. Even the BTA acknowledges that he followed that methodology, using apartment rents to establish rent for the real estate only and using apartment sales to value the real estate portion. The county's appraiser, Mr. Bauer, admitted that his methodology did not conform to Ohio law. I think that the issues that this court has always faced is, how do we go about extracting out business value from the real estate because of this commingling? I would suggest to this court that the Bauer appraisal, while it's a new way of looking at it, it still basically is looking at, in the income approach and the sales comparison approach, both starting with a continued use as an assisted living facility, a going concern value. Now, what he's done with the extracting of real estate value from a going concern, he used that lease coverage ratio that you referenced. All that is a percentage of the business revenue from the assisted living facility. The net leases that he used were based on a percentage of net operating income from the business. He, however, didn't review the leases that were used, and none of them were from Ohio. There were numerous problems with his appraisal. We outlined them in our brief. But if you look at the beginning of his income approach, he starts with the rents from the assisted living facility, which is the going concern, including real estate and services. His vacancy and credit losses the same way. His expenses, all of those relate to the business operation. So we start with total revenue from business, and the net income is also from business operation, and then he uses a percentage. Now, I would ask you to take a look at these percentages. If you believe that Mr. Bauer's analysis is correct, in the income approach, he says, of all this money that comes in, 25% of that is to the business, and 75% is the real estate in the income approach. However, in the sales comparison approach, he says, 20, because of his deduction, 20% is the business value, and 80% is real estate. Now, if we look at that.
Can I interrupt you real quick?
Sure.
Do you understand the BTA decision as turning on Bauer's income approach? He said he placed no weight on the sales approach, and I don't see the BTA really discussing it. It seems like all the action is with his income approach, and maybe you have a different take on that. But
the testimony in the
I'm asking you to abandon any arguments you have against his sales approach. It just
no,
seems like
I'm just saying is I'm saying if you look at it in one approach, he says the business portion is 20% and the other is 25%. There's no consistency in the two approaches, but I agree with you. He did rely on the income approach, and he stated so both in his appraisal report and before the Board of Tax Appeals. What I'm saying is, if you look at his income approach, if you start with the fact that the assisted living facility, the units, have a rental of $2,000, and memory care units are $2,820, they're basically the same size units. However, in the income approach, 25% of that, he says, is business, and 75% is real estate. Now, logically, if you look at the fact that you get $820 more for a memory care unit, you're not getting it because you have a bigger unit and more real estate. You're getting it because of additional services. However, he treats those as such that when you look at the overall rental, Mr. Rasek says if this were an apartment unit, it would rent for $550 a unit. Now, if you look at his 25% in the income approach, at 25% is business, that would mean of that $2,000 that somebody's paying for that memory care unit, for those services rendered, that's only worth $500, and the $1,500 that you are paying for that assisted living facility would be for the real estate. It's not logical. He's got them reversed. I think that if you look at this new approach that the Board of Tax Appeals was trying to put through and Mr. Bauer has set forth, we have set forth in our brief that the Appellate Tax Board of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts has already rejected this approach. Well, that wasn't an assisted living facility, it was a nursing home. And they realized that he wasn't getting to the real estate. He was doing going concern. And they also went through the same problems with his appraisal. Mr. Bauer didn't write his appraisal report. He had somebody else write it and somebody do all the legwork. He didn't even bother to look at the comps that he used in the assisted living facilities, even though they were in the same town. He came in, looked at the subject property, and that was it. I would like to reserve the remaining portion of my time.
Sure.
For the county, Ms. Gorey.
Yes, thank you very much. May it please the court. I'm Kelly Gorey of Rich and Gillis Law Group, and I'm here for the county appellees, Washington County. And I have with me Tom Sheevy, who is the amicus in this case, but I'm going to be taking all the time today, so he's not going to be speaking. First of all, I think the main issue in this case is the first thing for the court to decide is, did the BTA commit legal error in applying health care rate? And if they did not commit legal error in applying health care REIT, I think this turns into a very simple competing appraisal case where the court is not going to step into the shoes of the BTA as the finder of fact in evaluating a number of the alleged deficiencies in Bauer's report. But in terms of applying health care REIT, the BTA said, we find that healthcare REIT does not unequivocally require comparison to apartment properties, either in the sales comparison approach or the income approach. The BTA said, and quoted indeed much of the permissible language, the court uses may, the court uses permissible multiple times. The key factor in the healthcare REIT case was that the Board of Education's appraiser, want me to keep going? Okay.
Go ahead.
Looks like you were going to ask me a question.
No. If I'll ask,
okay.
I'll ask.
So the problem in healthcare REIT was that the Board of Education's appraiser essentially made no discernible attempt whatsoever to separate the business value from the real estate value. When the BTA rejected the appraisal there, it noted that because the case law is obvious that business value has to be separated from the real estate value, that the Board of Education's appraiser did an utterly lousy job in doing that. And because it is permissible to accept an apartment appraisal, the BTA chose to accept the apartment appraisal there of Mr. Rasek over the Board of Education's appraisal. On appeal, this court affirmed. And this court said, we've said multiple times in LTC properties, Dublin Senior Community, et cetera, that it's permissible for an appraiser to rely upon apartment comparables, both in the sales comparison and the income approach. But what the BTA did further there, in going back to the BTA decision, they cited that portion of the decision, and they noted that the court affirmed the BTA decision in healthcare REIT because of the problems with the Board of Education's appraisal. And so the BTA actually looked to the dissent in healthcare REIT as well, and noted, that was a 4-3 decision, noted that the dissent had noted that not in all cases do apartment comparables make the best comparables for an assisted living facility. The BTA went on to make a series of factual findings that the Subject facility is actually more like a skilled nursing facility. The units are really, really small. It has 52% of common area, so the total square footage is like 57,000 square feet.
Can I interrupt you real quick?
Absolutely.
So I asked your friend on the other side about the salience of Bowyer's sales approach, and he said he placed no weight on it, and I don't see the BTA decision turning on it. Do you agree with that?
Totally agree.
Okay.
I think the BTA decision is based entirely upon the income approach.
Okay.
So the BTA made factual findings. They're obviously supported by the record.
What's your response to this lease coverage ratio that your appraiser developed?
Thank you. Yes.
Looked to properties, and the lease rates there were generated from expectation of business.
That's not correct.
Okay.
And that's, in fact, not what he testified.
Well, I'm looking at page 230 of the transcript, and it says, and you can grab it if you want.
Yeah, I got it right here.
Okay.
Oh, I think I know what you're referring to. But yeah, go ahead.
So it says, so let's talk about these lease comparables that you used. First of all the net leases are based on a percentage of the net operating income of the business for each of the facilities that are included. He answers correct. So he seems to concede that.
I think that's, but I'd have to go back and look. I think that might have been in the context of talking about, so he had said that a number of operators will use, and that was one of the things the BTA focused on, is that market participants actually use this method in the marketplace. Buyers, sellers, lenders, everybody uses it. But so what Zach had been talking about, I think immediately prior to this, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think he had been saying to, upon cross-examination, that operators will use the method to determine what, when they're trying to negotiate an absolute net lease for this facility with the owner, what rent they can pay. So yes, from the operator's point of view, they're going to look at what their total overall operations are, which those aren't going to be known to the lessor landlord at that point. And I think what Zach was trying to suggest was that, yes, an operator will look at this method and say, okay, if I know that my overall operations are going to be X, what can I afford to pay in rent? So, but I don't think Zach was, if you go back to the rest of his testimony, he absolutely clears that up. And I think a question was asked, so the lease coverage ratio is based upon a percentage of the operating business's income in the lease. And Zach said, absolutely not. That is absolutely not correct. It's a, it's an absolute net lease of the real estate only that is a fixed annual rent. It has absolutely nothing to do with the profit or the amount of revenue by the operator. It's like, you know, the absolute net lease is, here is your annual rent, $660,000 annually, period.
Yeah, but it's tied to expectations of what the business is going to generate. It's not tied to the realty.
Oh, no, only from the operator's side.
Why does that matter?
Because it's just like any other business. So if I guess I'll just use Walgreens or something. If Walgreens is going to lease a building, and they say, okay, so what's my anticipated amount of revenue from the sales that I'm going to generate at the store? So my business is doing X on the premises. What amount of rent can I afford to pay? From the operator or the lessee's standpoint, of course it's based to some extent upon their business because their business generates income for it to be able to pay rent. But from the lessor's point of view, and Zach is more clear about this in the, you know, if you read through the entirety of the transcript, I think he makes it more clear. Plus, I think it's more clear in the written appraisal report too, that from a landlord lessor's standpoint, it's a flat annual rent. It has nothing to do with the business operations of the operator. It's just like any other business that operates. I think he used a UPS as an example in the hearing. So when they were went on cross-examination, they were going through this exact conversation. Zach used the example of a UPS facility. So UPS goes in, leases a facility. When UPS is negotiating their lease, they have to some to a certain extent consider what income their business is going to generate, because that's how they're paying the lease rate. So I think that's all Zach was trying to suggest. But from the less, and it's REITs. REITs are common investors of assisted living, seniors housing properties. When a REIT comes in to negotiate a lease, they don't look at what the operator's overall business operations are. The operator's probably not going to let them have that information. So the lessor says, here's the annual rent I want. Let's just say $660,000 a year. And then the tenant says, okay, am I going to do well enough on the premises to pay that rent? So, and another aspect, the rent doesn't change. So there might be annual escalations, just like you would have in a regular, let's use UPS. So it might be, you know, $660,000 is the rent for year one. In year five, it increases by 1.5% of the $660,000. It doesn't fluctuate based upon the tenant's operations. It's not a percentage of gross sales. It is literally a fixed rent for the real estate only. So the operator comes in, operator has the licenses, the personal property. The absolute net leases that Zach relied upon are absolute net leases of the real estate only and nothing else. So I wanted to make sure that the record is really, really clear on that point, because it's not a percentage of business income. It is literally a flat rental rate. And he clears it up later, and it might even be on my redirect, but I understand your specific reference to that one point. But I believe it was, he either misunderstood the context of the question, but if you keep going a little further, he does clear it up. But our position is that the court first has to find that there's legal error in applying healthcare REIT. There is no legal error in applying healthcare REIT here.
Well, I think that I might agree with you that healthcare REIT doesn't establish any law to be applied in this case in terms of requiring apartment comparables or assisted living facilities. But I think we all agree here that the overarching principle of law is you have to separate out the business income and achieve a realty-only valuation.
Absolutely.
I think that's what your friend on the other side is.
Absolutely. And my response to that is that, in fact, this particular county cared so much about getting it right that we went out and hired literally one of the best appraisers in the entire United States to value the property at what it would actually sell for in the open market. And you'll note in the BTA's decision that was not only one of the factors, but perhaps a fairly significant factor, is this mimics the actual actions of market participants such that a buyer would use the lease coverage ratio, perhaps in buying the property and determining what the real estate itself is worth. So this actually, his valuation arrives at what the property would sell for in the open market, which is the quintessential constitutional definition of true value. But the BTA did not commit any legal error or factual error in finding that Zach's methodology was well supported from the evidence in the record.
But you would agree that inputs to that methodology have to be sound, because sort of the garbage in, garbage out principle.
Sure, absolutely. And I don't believe, I mean, sure, objections were raised to the method in which he collected the data. But the BTA heard all those arguments and rejected those arguments as the finder of fact. So if we're getting into there's no legal error, then this is really, it is a simple competing appraisal case in which this court will not step into the shoes of the BTA. And for that reason, we are asking that the BTA decision be affirmed in its entirety.
Thank you. Ms. Barnschmidt, you have 4 minutes and 22 seconds.
Thank you very much.
Could you address what we were talking about with the record citations there involving his statement on page 230?
Well, I thought that your interpretation of how he testified was correct, but I would suggest that if you look to the supplement at page 187, which is page 78 of Mr. Bauer's appraisal, you can see where he has his net lease coverage ratios, and they do reflect the net operating income per unit of those. But here's the problem with the entire methodology, and it's set forth on that page. In his income approach, at the bottom of this page, he starts with a concluded stabilized net operating income of the going concern. So he has said the net operating income as of January 1st, 2014 would be $1,094,718. That is definitely from the business. And it's to that business income that he applies his lease ratio.
Do you think the lease coverage ratio is invalid as a matter of law, or are you more questioning
it depends
the inputs that go into the computations?
I think it could be valuable if you were doing a going concern approach to valuing this. But we are trying to do fee simple, unencumbered. And unfortunately, when you start with business value and you base your net lease coverage ratio, the bottom line is that is based on a ratio to net operating income. So when you're using a percentage that is based on net operating income and you apply that to the net operating income of the business, you basically are valuing the going concern. That's the problem. He didn't properly allocate out the value for the real estate and that from the business. He believes that of that rent that is established, that in the income approach, only 25% is related to the business and 75% relates to real estate. And it, under the facts, is not logical. And I would ask this court, when you're looking at it, the BTA erred, made a legal error. And here's what they leave us with in this case. If you're going to do assisted living facilities, we have to have some kind of common methodology so that whether the county, school board, or property owners come before the court, that we know how we should be presenting appraisal evidence. The way this decision is rendered, sometimes healthcare REIT could apply, and sometimes it couldn't apply. And we don't have any reasonable way as a property owner, county, or school board to determine when does the BTA think it's more like healthcare REIT, this assisted living facility, and when is it more like the case in the decision in HCP EMO. And that's the problem that we have in this case. I would just suggest that if you look at the brief that was filed in by the amicus, their reference to the Cambridge and Delhi cases, those were Section 8 elderly apartment projects. Those weren't assisted living projects. They were just geared to seniors only. We believe that the decision of the Board of Tax Appeals will lead to valuing real estate based upon a value in use as opposed to value in exchange for just the real estate. We believe this is in contravention of Ohio case law and the Ohio Constitution. But the problem is that where does it stop? Are we going to use percentage rent based on gross revenues to do service garages? Hotels, are we going to go back and use that for department stores? That's the problem that we have is, I don't believe that Mr. Bauer, in his analysis, properly allocated out a value for the real estate only, and we believe that Mr. Rasek, in his analysis, by using the apartment rental comps in this particular case, actually was able to value the real estate only and not have to determine what the going concern business value was. And based on that, we would ask the board to reverse the decision of the Board of Tax Appeals, render a decision based upon Mr. Rasich's value. And it should be a concern that you can have two appraisers coming in. Obviously, Mr. Rasich has been an appraiser for a long time. Mr. Bauer is a recent appraiser. However, when you have the same real estate...
Counselor, your light's on there,
so I'm
just
asking
you to sum up there.
There has to be something askew when one is at $3 million and one is at $9
million. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
The case will be submitted, and you'll be advised of our decision. Marshall, would you adjourn?
Adjourn.